welcome to the USEA's official podcast. My guest today is Faith Fessenden, who is a judge of dressage sport horse breeds, and she's also been involved with the KWPN North America now for a number of years as a jury member. She's a keen educationalist and breeder, and she also studies gait analysis and equine biomechanics. Faith, welcome to the program.
Hello, and thank you for having me today.
Well, that's a lot of hats that you wear in the sport, and of course you recently were a co-presenter of the USEA's Future Event Horse Seminar, which is why we wanted to bring you on today to talk a little bit more about the requirements for that program in terms of conformation, type and breeding. So where would you like to start, Faith?
Well, I think in order to just make people aware of how welcome they are with whatever type of horse they happen to have, it provides a place if they are unsure of whether their youngster is suited for the discipline of eventing. It's a place where they can come and an objective group of people will say, we feel that this horse may be good for lower levels, but with the goal set for our program of an upper-level horse, this horse may have conformational restrictions or limitations that would preclude that advancement. And one never knows. There may be the jewel on the beach there that someone is unaware of just how special their horse is, and we can encourage them to pursue it more. We also use it as a platform to provide education to the audience, attendees, breeders, other judges even, to say, here is what is the baseline that is necessary for an event horse, and it is soundness and type. And the type is bringing into it the different systems that the horse has or that any living creature has, is that the cardio and the respiratory circulation structure, the skeletal structure, and then the basic biomechanics of the different movements and efforts that are involved. And with the sport of eventing, of course, it is legs and feet and soundness that are going to, that is where any sort of really major breakdown is going to happen. So that's what we bring to a group, is saying, here's the basics, and obviously these basics can be found in any manual from Pony Club to 4-H to, you know, the basic book on Horses 101. And we've all seen them, about the different foot flight patterns of the forelegs and the hind legs and structure, et cetera, body type. But we can take it beyond that and just say, okay, start there and then let's work and let's educate ourselves beyond that. With regard to the movement, again, there is going to be a certain type of movement that is required for the dressage phase, for the jumping phase, and, of course, the cross-country phase, and that we are able to educate with either videos and live horses right there. We're open for questions. We encourage questions that take us off in different directions. Who knows where they take us? But we hope that everyone comes away with a better appreciation of either what they have standing in their back lot or what they want to adjust their breeding or their buying program and riding program for.
Well, first of all, let's look at the stamp that you call that type or stamp of horse. Are you looking for something different now to what you did with the long format? Of course, rules change, types of horses change. Has that shifted your focus onto the basic type of young event horse that you're looking at, Faith?
Well, for the upper levels, not necessarily. I think we are going to see, and we have seen, and at international level, we're seeing in the lists of more of the warm bloods coming in and being successful. And yet there really needs to be a certain percentage of a blood type or thoroughbred infusion in order to have that that long-term ability that is going to sustain the conditioning required. When the formats changed, everyone thought it was going to be an easy run-up and that the conditioning requirements were not going to be as dramatic, and they have since found that they are almost more so, that they've got to overcome that thought that, well, I can get by with a little bit less of a horse, or a horse that is more of a dressage type or more of a jumping type, and that's not the case. And we're seeing that at the world level of world championships and Olympics, European championships, North American championships, where it really still is a high predominance of thoroughbred blood or blood type that is necessary, even with the new format.
Of course, we see a lot of off-the-track thoroughbreds too, don't we? And if you look at Europe, they're getting them from further south. Andrew Nicholson, I think, does most of his shopping in Spain these days. So they're looking for that light thoroughbred, although basically the soundness is obviously the first priority, isn't it? The soundness and suitability. But I know in the seminar you had addressed looking at the horse with the prospect of it being actually a four-star horse, but the majority of the USEA membership, of course, is at the lower levels.
Yes. There is always the trickle down, and one must have a goal, and if the goal is too shallow or not high enough, then what comes is generations of maybe mediocre horses, and in the lifeline or the lifetime and the rotation of every 3 to 6 to 7 to 10 years within horses' lifespan, or with not the lifespan, the use, when you begin to use them and when they come to their peak, that gobbles up time. And so to set the standard higher is going to elevate the entire pool. And hopefully people will stay here in the U.S. to get their horses. And as I say, the trickle-down of the quality horses will be found more and more in the lower levels. And the breeders hopefully will adjust their programs accordingly.
Of course, it is establishing that foundation, isn't it? The breeding stock foundation that's important. So getting the right type is critical then, given, you know, the demands of the sport are continually changing here. Over time, Faith, in say the last sort of 10 years in this country, what changes have you seen? What shifts amongst this breeding stock?
Well, of course, the Irish sport horse, the Irish horse, which has a high infusion of Irish thoroughbred in it, has so anchored our event superstars. And taking that, and with the other breeds coming into it, the other warm blood breeds coming into it, it's making people aware that there is a standard no matter what is coming in and out of it. And I think what is difficult in the U.S. for thoroughbreds is the fact that the long-distance horse is few and far between, is sort of an endangered species as far as thoroughbred is concerned. It's the shorter tracks, the more races on the card for a day at the track. So in the thoroughbred breeding industry, one no longer sees the great distance horses that had, you know, the longer muscles, the longer lines, the longer bones. So right there, it's a little bit of a challenge to find the good thoroughbreds anymore here. And then bringing in some warm blood where people are or maybe finishing higher because of their dressage score. And you get some of the famous jumping lines coming in that really help with all of that. But still, there has to be that baseline. And right now, it is in a state of flux, mainly because of the change in the thoroughbred breeding, the influx of the warm blood. And it's sifting through that and still saying, don't lose sight of what is needed for a top-level event horse.
Well, Lucinda Green refers to the evolution of the sport in Europe as they're becoming European eventing. And I refer to the mainland now, not England, but European eventing. And that is requiring a different animal, a different approach to the sport, a different demands of the course from the courses on the mainland there. How is that model affecting the sport over here and the choice of event horses as you see it on over here in the States?
Well, I find that comment very interesting, and that's something I, just in mentioning it now, want to go look at more. And I would love to read more about what Lucinda thinks about that. I don't know that U.S. breeders are that aware that there is a difference. We just tend to think of over there. And I do think that the European continent, of course, they are such a dominant force in show jumping and dressage. And it tends to come from a lot of times the lack of land and the lack of ability to get out and have that those courses available. And the indoor arenas lend themselves to those other two disciplines. And that's where, with that, for America and England, we're challenged by just to focus on the smaller areas where those two disciplines can be really developed to the nth degree.
Well, the other aspect, of course, when we look at conformation is the consideration of the number of jumps in the horse's life that they can make. I mean, you often hear different comments about, you know, a horse has only got so many jumps in him, only so many courses. Can you put that in perspective in terms of what you're looking at with a young event horse, Faith?
Oh, gosh. Yes, that, of course, is bringing the hardcore right down to the bottom line. And once again, it is a focus on structural soundness and the maintenance and preparation of the young horses, even as they come up as a two-year-old and three-year-old and how they're started. It digresses or diverts into good nutrition and, of course, sharp farrier work, an educated eye monitoring their progress. All of those things play to sending the soundest and mentally prepared or fittest horse into the fray. So from that point of view, it would be some basic education with the idea that let's make sure we're giving the horse the best chance to make those designated numbers of jumps for his lifetime.
So in terms of the actual conformation then of the forelimb, let's look at the limbs, just the forelimbs and then the hind limbs. Can you give us any rough sort of outline here of what the ideal limbs look like, keeping in mind we're still working on the perfect horse, right?
Oh, sure, the perfect, as they say, the only perfect person is when they are spoken of at graveside. So we know that there is no perfect horse, and we can't set a computer and say, okay, here, stamp them out to these specifications. Some of the basic tenets of the program is, if we start with the limbs, it would be bone structure or bone substance appropriate to the size of the horse. Is it in balance, or do you have a large body on legs that are too fine? So there's just the pillars of support there that are appropriate to the size. Then also the feet, have them be of good shape and good form, and again appropriate to the size of the horse. A shorter cannon and a longer forearm, joints that are clean and hard, and by that I mean not filled or blurry already as a young horse where there's issues taking place in either development, feeding, or stress based on angulations.
Well, that I think is, as you say, the broader canvas, isn't it? And in terms of the breeds, the foundation, as we said earlier, is vitally important to have that breeding stock here in the States. So we don't want people to feel they have to go to Europe to shop anymore. What breeds, and obviously you're an advocate of the KWPN, but what other breeds would you advise maybe new owners to come in, were coming into the sport, to be looking at?
Well, with regards to being an advocate, I'm an advocate of good sport horses, whatever the breed is. And as most of our listeners know, that if one looks at the pedigree of a European sport horse, you're going to see the same names over and over. So the country of affiliation or stud book is really the management of that group of horses, because they're all so interbred now and their similarities. So I just happen to have come up through the vehicle of the KWPN. But the Holsteiner group, of course, those are exceptions. jumping horses, the French horses, you harken back to the French Thoroughbred, so they tend to be often more of the type, and yet you don't want them too heavy. But for, I would say any of the bloodstock groups, any of the breeding groups, I would encourage any of them to come and let the horse tell you what he wants to do. Often we say, well, we breed dressage horses or we breed jumping horses, and yet if you have even a, I'm an advocate of having event riders start young horses, because the horse gets to go out and be out in nature, not in a 20 by 60 ring all the time or locked in a stall. They get to live out. They're ridden out. They're ridden forward. They're ridden on looser reins. They don't have a rider that panics easily or a rider that is going to let them get away with things. And yet it's just about going forward and growing up in optimum, as close to nature situations as we can. So as I say, I urge all warm blood breeders, all the stud book breeders, to have that riders start their youngsters. And then as they begin to do fence work or grid work or dressage patterns, that the horse then says, here's what I love, here's where I'm comfortable. So as I say, I'm a great cheerleader for the world of eventing for all of the stud books.
Well, clearly temperament is obviously very, very important. We mentioned conformation, type, and breeding. Temperament we'd have to throw in there. But I want to also, because I think temperament can be a very, you know, individual taste anyway. Let me throw this in out for you, Faith. Rideability. You know, we often hear that term used, but how could you define rideability? And if you tell a young rider or someone maybe just coming into the sport, well, that horse needs to be rideable for you. Rideability is it's a very loose term, isn't it? And I think it's probably very individual too.
Yes, it is. And the rideability, of course, is directly proportional to the skill of the rider. And you may have a horse that's very rideable that in terms of his brain, his sensitivity, his awareness of things around him, that may put up with not such a good rider. And you could say that horse is very rideable. And then you have a very good rider who's taking a horse that is sensitive and insecure and teaches that horse trust and partnership. And as an observer, without talking to the rider, they could say, well, that horse looks very rideable. But this is where the riders need to give, or the starters need to give feedback and saying, this is a very sensitive horse. They need to be brought along very carefully and slowly. So it really comes back to qualified riders who are going to be working these horses. But yes, it is that temperament and that rideability in the heart. Of course, we use the term that it has heart. Of some of these horses that absolutely can overcome conformational challenges, structural challenges, system challenges, that they will do anything for their rider and take them above and beyond. Say another horse that has more conformational promise but doesn't have the mind or the work ethic for it. So it's a multi-componented aspect of the sport.
And then I think another aspect to that would be, you know, the horse staying in front of the leg in terms of rideability. The skill of the rider is one thing, but you want a horse that's going in front of the leg too, don't you?
Absolutely. In the stud books, they often refer to that as go. Does he have go? And is the go always there, ready to be called upon? And, of course, a horse that has that is to be a student, to be taken through the levels. And of course, if they're talented and have that, it's very easy for someone perhaps to overuse them, overwork them. But on the other hand, one does look for that. And that goes back a little bit to the temperament and the rideability. It's just an eagerness about life. And that's where, to me, the way the horses are started is so critical.
Go, I love that. We'll call it horses go, whether they've got the go or not. Well, I think on that note, I think we've pretty much covered all those general aspects, and I know they can find out a lot more on the USEA's website as well. Faith, is there any other message that you would like to give to people when they're looking at that future event horse?
Oh, I think the things that are unspoken that turn out to be a delight for attendees is the camaraderie and how positive and open everyone in that world is about sharing information, whether it's our committee, whether it's the attendees, the breeders. It's such a positive experience. It's not about lead and feeds. And let me tell you, I've got a good horse and you don't. It is just very welcoming and open, and let's help find the good horses and let's help them have a good experience and let's help you have a good experience with your horse.
Wonderful. Well, and on that note, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show, Faith, and giving us your insight into what to look for in the future event horse. Thank you so much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
And you can find out more about the Future Event Horse program on the website at useventing.com. I'll be back with more on this subject and other topics of interest to members right here on the USEA's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford, and until the next time, enjoy your eventing.